the hour of 8 a.m. having arrived, I'm going to call to order Government Operations Reform, Technology, and Elections. Members, first bill on the agenda is House File 3066. Representative Lane, we left with this bill at our last meeting, and they were working on it, and I believe Representative Broad and Representative Olson have worked with Representative Lane on the bill. So I'm going to move that House File 3066, as amended, be recommended to pass and be placed on the general register. Then I'm going to move the DE1 amendment, and Representative Lane or Mr. Gehring, either one, why don't you explain the DE1 amendment for us?
All right, this is to establish when the public schools will be available for frequent caucuses, so we need to have the parties come together and set a date by March 1st of the previous year. And if they don't come to an agreement for one reason or another, then the default date is the first Tuesday in February.
And Representative Broad, you had some concerns before. Does this answer your concerns?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, both Mr. Gehring and Representative Lane were great in working through the language.
Okay. Any further discussion to the amendment? And I believe we have a quorum. So seeing no further discussion, all those in favor of the DE1 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. We have House File 3066 as amended. Is there any further discussion? Seeing no discussion, then I'll renew my motion that House File 3066 as amended be recommended to pass and be placed on the general register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah. I think we'll go to House File 2582, Representative House.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move that House File 2582 be recommended to pass and sent to the House floor.
Representative House, to you, Bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The reason I started doing this bill is because of a friend of mine from junior high school whose brother served in Vietnam, and I brought with me a copy of a book back in the summer of 1967 on the old Met Stadium infield. 150 men and women were sworn into the Marines. They stayed through the fourth inning, got on the bus, went to Wilt Chamberlain Airfield and were flown to San Diego, went to boot camp, went to Vietnam, and this book is written by one of those gentlemen, and it's a very good story. It's full of passion, full of trouble, obviously, but also very cheerful towards the end. And my friend wanted to welcome home Vietnam veterans because she didn't think they had been welcomed home. And I thought it was a good idea to do this combined with what the Minnesota Twins did back in 1967. They adopted this platoon, and I think it's only fitting that the state of Minnesota now welcomes them home, so this bill would make March 29th Vietnam Veterans Day. It's not going to be a paid holiday or anything. It's just be a day to signify that's a day to honor a Vietnam veteran if you would like.
All right. Representative Howell, do you have anyone to testify for the bill? Or?
No, I do not.
Any discussion to the bill? Seeing no further discussion, anyone in the audience wish to testify for or against the bill? Seeing none, then Representative Halsey needs his motion that House File 2582 be recommended to pass and be placed on the general register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Members, I'm going to go to House File 3172, and I'd like Ms. Frazier to come down. And Representative McFarland, if you're here, yes, there she is. I thought I saw her. They don't have it? We don't have it. Hang on 1 second. I think the delete all is missing. Want to go to the next one? All right. This is a rather large amendment.
Representative Farland, I have a copy.
Representative Farland, you're actually doing very well today. We don't have it. Then I think what we'll do, if we don't have the delete all, we really can't. All right. Representative McFarland, I apologize. We do not have the delete all amendment. Apparently in the shifting from this bill being delayed twice, we don't have it. So if you could just stay for a second, and I think what I'll do, Representative Hilty is the other member who has the bill up today. I'm going to bring up Representative Hilty's bill, and we'll see what we can do to get the delete all. So you can just stay with us. We'll make a copy of the delete all, and then we'll get it to members. So thank you for your patience. Representative Hilty, let's go to you. Representative Hilty.
thank you, Mr. Chair.
Pardon me.
Mr. Chair, I would move that the House File 3699 be recommended to pass and be referred to the General Register. Mr. Chair, members, House File 3699 is, in fact, a separate bill that represents the amendment that we attached to Senate File 1298 in this committee last week. Rather than complicate matters by having an unagreed to amendment on the Senate file, I determined in consultation with the chair and with the Office of the Secretary of State and Mr. Schroeder from the Governor's Office that the best thing to do would just be to bring this bill separately. Mr. Chair, we have already had the discussion of the bill in its amendment form last week, so I don't think we need to go into that unless there are further questions about that. But, Mr. Chair, there is an amendment to the bill, H3699A1.
You wish to move that amendment at this time?
I do, Mr. Chair.
All right.
And what this is the agreement that we have come to regarding the township elections issue.
Representative Hilty, I'm not sure we have that amendment either. It's being copied. All right, that's being copied. So why don't you explain your amendment, Representative Hilty?
Mr. Chair, as you're probably aware, we have had a number of meetings in the interim and early on in the session regarding this issue, which is that current law, although there's an exemption through the 2009 elections, does require that all township elections make available the handicap or assisted voting devices, the auto mark that is used in the general elections. The issue has been that there is significant cost involved in making those machines available. In fact, there, because in the general election, some precincts are combined, there aren't in some counties a sufficient number of those machines available for use in the first place. So, considering that more than 90%, I don't recall the exact number, but upwards of 95% of the town board elections, which are held in March, attracts fewer than 20 voters, and many of them, most of them, again in that high percentage, are uncontested. It's very difficult to justify incurring expense of several hundred dollars to provide equipment for that for those elections. The compromise language that we have in the amendment, and that has been introduced in a separate bill. I think the committee now has that in its possession. I think it's House File 3929. Really, I don't think anyone is totally happy with. Certainly, Mr. Chair, members, I am not. I know members of the disability community are not, and I don't think that townships are either, but that's why it's a compromise, Mr. Chair.
All right. I don't think we have your amendment yet. So, yes, Representative Brock.
Mr. Chairman, I do have a couple questions.
All right, Representative Brock.
Representative Hilty, can you talk to me a little bit about Section 3.15, why the subdivision does not cover the offices in Section 206.89, which I understand to be the federal offices plus the governor? Why would we want a discrepancy between recount procedures for statewide offices?
Representative Hilty.
I'm not sure exactly. Did you repeat your citation, Representative Brett? But just in general, I can tell you, statewide offices are already covered in the current statute. What this does is, since they are the only offices that are covered in the current statute, the idea here was that there could be discrepancies, there could be malfunctions in the programming or in the functioning of the tabulating equipment that would not show up in an audit of only those wider elections. I thought they would probably be apparent to the candidate that was involved.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Representative Broad, if in the next election you ended up losing by an enormous percentage in a precinct that you always won, you would kind of suspect that there was something wrong there. And what this would provide is an opportunity for a candidate at any level to ask to have up to three specific precincts included in the audit.
Mr. Chairman, maybe Mr. Gehring can point or fill me in maybe a little bit on 206.89. My understanding, and I forgot to bring the book with me, but was that didn't cover all of the statewide offices. It only covered a portion of the statewide offices.
Mr. Gehring.
Mr. Chair, Representative Broad, Subdivision 3 of 206.89 covers the governor and candidates for president, U.S. senator, and U.S. representative.
Right.
So those are the offices that will be excluded based on this cross-reference.
Right.
All right. Representative Broad.
Mr. Chairman, I guess that's what my understanding was, and so it just seems to me that we are excluding one of the statewide offices, but the others then are governed under the statute, so I'm confused. You have Secretary of State, Attorney General, State Auditor. I guess I'm confused at why they would travel separately and have a separate recount process.
Representative Hilty.
Mr. Chair, Representative Broad, those other statewide offices will be treated the same as any of the legislative offices or local elections. They were not included in the bill in the first place because we had concerns about simply the mechanics of it, that we didn't want to have to do the recount over and over and over for that many offices. But what this would provide then is the same protection to those statewide candidates as the other candidates that are provided for in this bill, which is that they could ask to have specific precincts included in an audit, and if discrepancies were discovered as a result of that, then that would trigger a broader audit in the same way that is provided for in the statewide offices currently.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative
Brock. And just another question, Representative Hilty. Currently, can you tell me how the costs are paid for these recounts, the optional recounts, the discretionary recounts? When there is a discrepancy, is there a is it just that if there's one vote difference, then the candidate is repaid for their costs currently in law?
Representative Hilty.
Mr. Chair, Representative Broad, the discrepancy has to be more than one vote. I don't since the whole formula for expanding the recount is somewhat complex, we could perhaps have Mr. Gehring describe that if you wanted.
Mr. Chairman, let me just finish the question, and then I think we can get there, because maybe it would help where I'm going with this. But the way I read the bill, on line 3.11, if the cost of the partial recount indicate a result, I guess I'm not understanding that sentence, what the costs of a partial recount indicate a result different from that which was reported on election day. So is that the costs that are different, or is it the votes that are different? And if so, it doesn't put any parameters around that difference, meaning is it one vote, is it $1? I just don't understand what that's getting at.
Mr. Chair, Representative Broad, I think that's just a typo. I think that that should, that the word there should be results, not costs.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, and if that's so, then what this then does, the way I understand it, is that it shifts the burden to pay for these selective recounts directly on the backs of the political subdivision for one vote difference, is how I read this. And that's a pretty big shift in cost-bearing for these optional recounts. And so I just wanted to point that out, Mr.
President Hilty, we have your amendment. Why don't we, you've made the motion on the A1 amendment. Let's adopt the A1 amendment, and then the bill will be in the form. So Representative Hilty renews his motion on the A1 amendment. Any further discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay? Motion prevails. Okay, Representative Hilty, I hope your bill is in the order that you need it now. So
it is, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Chair, if I could just respond briefly to Representative Broad. Representative Broad is not on the vote. It is an acceptable performance standard that's described in Section 206.89, Subdivision 4.
Representative Broad.
That is greater than 0.5%.
Representative Broad, does that answer your question?
Mr. Chairman, yes, that helps. So there's no difference in shift or of burden then, Representative Hilty, the way you read it?
Representative Hilty shaking his head no, but he might want to put that on the record.
yes, Representative Broad, that's correct.
Any further discussion to House File 3699 as amended? Representative
Mr.
Broad.
Mr. Chairman, I have an amendment.
You have an amendment. Yeah, we just moved it. I think we've got a page right in back. If you see. Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
While the broad amendment is being distributed, Mr. Gehring did have a suggestion to correct the ambiguity and the typo in
Mr. Gehring?
Section that Representative Broad referred to earlier.
Mr. Gehring?
Mr. Chair, the amendment would be on page 3, line 11. Delete the word costs and insert results. And that's the typo correction. And then later in that sentence where it says a result, delete a result and insert an outcome.
All right. Representative Hilty, would you move that as an amendment, please?
Mr. Chair, I would move that.
And then Mr. Gehring and Ms. Anderson, do you have the amendment? She's got it.
Mr. Chair, the same change would be made on line 4.9.
All right, and Representative Hilty moves that amendment. Any further discussion on that amendment? Seeing no further discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. And now we're to the broad amendment, I believe.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I appreciate the intent of Representative Hilty's bill. Although we heard many times yesterday on the House floor that certain bills were not quite ready for prime time, I would love to work with Representative Hilty on improving this process, but I don't think this bill quite gets the direction we want to go. I have some concerns over the burden on local governments in terms of the addition of the manual recount in many cases and the selective nature of the precincts. So, Mr. Chairman, it moves to delete a good portion of the bill that leaves intact the third section.
So, Representative Broad moves the A2 amendment and to the A2 amendment. Representative Hilty.
Mr. Chair, I would oppose this amendment. I think that the sections that Representative Broad would delete are, as he observed, pretty much the heart of the bill. These provisions were actually suggested to me by one of the county elections officials, and I have discussed it with others, and I found no disagreement. I've had no negative responses to this proposal at all. I think it's very appropriate that we afford the same kinds of protections and the same kinds of confidence in the reliability of our election systems and procedures to all candidates rather than just the major candidates. And that's what these provisions do. I think that it's important that they remain in the bill.
Any further discussion to the broad amendment? Seeing no further discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay?
No.
The nays have it. Motion does not prevail. Any further discussion? Any further discussion? Seeing no further discussion, Representative Hilty renews his motion that House File 3699, as amended, be recommended to pass and be placed on the general register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Hilty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Brown.
Can I just ask a procedural question to Representative Hilty when she sits down?
Yes.
Related to that provision in 1298, will he then be striking that on the House floor, or where is that going to come out of that bill?
Representative Hilty.
Mr. Chair, Representative Broad, yes, the bill is on the calendar, and it will be an amendment. There, in addition to that, there are a couple technical corrections that need to be made in the bill, and they will be in the form of an amendment on the House floor.
Representative Broad, that answers your question. It's not my preference, but that's what's going to be done. Representative McFarland, members, we are finally going back for the third time to House File 3172. And I'm going to move that House File 3172 be recommended to pass and be placed on the General Register. And then I will move the DE1 amendment. And the DE1 amendment incorporates into House File 3172 the McFarland bill, the Kalin bill, the Dietrich bill, and the Winkler and Simon bills. Members, you've heard me say this before, but in order to get some election bills passed and signed by the governor, the process had been that leadership had wanted omnibus election bills, which the governor has vetoed. This chair and Senator Rest had preferred individual bills, and leadership did not want to take individual bills up on the House floor. Senate did it rather well. The compromise is the bundling. Now, I would like the Secretary of State's office to confirm for the record that what we have before us, should the DE1 amendment prevail, would be a piece of legislation that in all likelihood the governor would sign if it reaches his desk in this form. So, Ms. Frazier, can you describe for the committee what this bundle will do, precious bundle that it is, when it gets to the governor's desk?
Mr. Chair and members, for the record, my name is Beth Frazier. I'm the Director of Governmental Affairs for the Secretary of State's office. And I believe there is a technical amendment to your amendment. And so assuming that that technical amendment to your amendment is adopted, we have discussed all of the provisions included in this bill with staff at the Governor's office. We have made changes to accommodate every objection that they have raised, and so we have every reason to believe that it will be signed if passed in this form.
All right, members, I'm going to move the A1 amendment to the DE1 amendment to make sure it is in the form that Ms. Frazier just stated. So is there any discussion to the A1 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Now the bill should be, or the amendment should be in the form that it is. With that, I am going to put the DE1 amendment on the bill. So any further discussion to the DE1 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. The bill should be in the form that Ms. Frazier just described. And with that, I would like to have, Representative McFarland has been very patient. She's come three times to committee. And we would like to have her explain her part of the bill. And then I want to go through the other members who have parts to the bill. And if the Secretary of State would then explain any other extraneous, and I hope there aren't many parts to this bill. So Representative McFarland, thank you for being very patient.
Thank you. I just want to stress also that this has been a compromise, at least my section, between myself, the Governor's Office, Secretary of State's Office, and all the other interested parties, and there have been concessions made by all. I would like to defer to Beth Frazier, though, for the explanation about the changes.
Ms. Frazier?
Mr. Chair and members, the sections of the bill that come from Representative McFarland's bill are sections 3, 8, and 11 of the bill, and they are very similar to the bill passed last year related to some election judges in the polling places not having to be affiliated with major political parties. It still allows people who aren't affiliated with major political parties to serve as election judges, as long as there are at least two judges in the polling place at all times who are affiliated with the different major political parties. There are some duties that could only be undertaken by election judges of two different major political parties. It also eliminates the requirement that election judges in township and school board elections be affiliated with major political parties. The changes from the bill that you heard last year are that we are changing the date that the list, political parties have to turn in lists of potential election judges to county auditors, and we're changing the due date for those lists from July to June. so that local election officials have the list in their hands earlier and can make better use of them. Changing on in section 3 of the bill on page 3, as the A1 amendment just did, it changed on 3.9, inserted except as provided in this section, and changed shall or may to shall, so that the list from the parties must be used unless, as it says on 3.13, no list has been furnished or the names have been exhausted. So we're making that a requirement again. We are on 3.13 and 14, similarly, reinstating language that says after all names have been exhausted, again, requiring that the list be used. And so those are the primary changes that we're making to this section. We're also changing the effective date because last August it doesn't work so well at this point.
All right. Representative Farland, do you have anything else you want to add to this?
No, I'm hoping that will go through.
All right. Thank you very much. Representative Kalin, your section of the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If it pleases you, I presented from my
That's
seat
fine.
Here.
That's fine.
Sections 1 and 2 are related to the delivery of absentee ballots. The significant changes involve accommodating those who have incapacitating health reasons shortly before the election or a disability, and then also expanding eligibility to assisted living facilities in addition to nursing homes currently. And then Section 2 merely extends the time from 4 days preceding an election for agent delivery to 7 days, and also strengthens the fact that the agent must have an existing relationship with the voter. And I don't know if Ms. Fraser wants to add anything to that description. No. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Ms. Fraser, could you describe Representative Dietrich's section? She was here in the previous two meetings, and I think she's in committee, so...
Yes, Mr. Chair. Representative Dietrich's section has a few sections in the bill. Sections 4, 9, 10, 12. And all of those sections relate to school elections. Section 4 allows schools to hold elections on questions by mail without getting permission of the county auditor, since they have elections themselves. It also clarifies the timing for letting the auditor know that the election will be fulfilled by mail or done by mail, and clarifies that the procedures must be posted. The word given wasn't very clear. What does the given mean? Section 9 allows changes a requirement that was put into law a few years ago. Just a few years ago, school boards were required to hold primaries if there were more than two times the number of candidates. So if there would be more than two candidates for every seat, they were required to hold primaries. This makes that optional so that school boards may hold primaries or may decide not to hold primaries as long as they make that decision by June 1st of each year. Section 10 goes along with that change and talks about the filing period if there are not primaries. And Section 12 allows school boards to use electronic voting systems, both the ballot counters and the auto-marked accessible voting machines for school district elections.
Thank you. Representative Winkler, to your section for the bill.
Mr. Chair, members, Section 13 basically has two parts. The first part gets any kind of audit or recount that must be completed in time to get the electors off to the Electoral College. We wouldn't want them to be tardy, and so it changes that deadline. And the second section, I would actually have Ms. Frazier explain in more detail.
Ms. Frazier.
Mr. Chair, I think that Representative Winslow's entire bill is section 13.
Part B, I guess.
Okay, Part B. Both of these sections have to do with the post-election audit, which right now, it started in 2006, and every county must audit between 2 and 4 precincts to be sure that the machines worked well. If there is a discrepancy of more than 0.5%, then it triggers further audits, and it, in those additional audits, there is still an issue. It triggers further audits of all of the precincts in the county. That third step, if we were to ever get to it in 2006, nobody got beyond step two, but if we were to get to step three, they have up until 6 weeks after the general election. And if there are still significant problems, then it changes from an audit into an actual recount of either the whole congressional district or statewide. And they have until 10 weeks after the general election to finish that. And as Representative Winkler said, since the Electoral College is going to meet on December 15th, whether or not we're done auditing the presidential race, in theory, if there were a huge problem with the machines, we could not be able to send our electors because we wouldn't be able to certify the results of the presidential election. So we wanted to speed up the timing of phases 3 and 4 if they were to happen. So what this does is it says that phase 3 has to be completed within 1 week and phase 4 has to be completed within 2 weeks. And because it would be very difficult for the Secretary of State's office to conduct recounts in either a full congressional district or all 87 counties in the case of the presidential or U.S. Senate race, this requires the county to oversee a recount of all of the ballots in their own jurisdiction and report those results to the Secretary of State.
Thank you. Representative Simon, to your section.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My section is Section 14 on the back of the DE1 amendment, starting on line 6.29. Basically, the problem is that a law that we passed that went into effect last year on August 1st called into question, at least, there was a reasonable question as to whether pre-existing voter registration cards and materials were still could still be used. And just to make absolutely sure that that's the case, that people who signed up and registered to vote on these pre-existing cards would not somehow be challenge. That's why this provision is in here, and Ms. Frazier could elaborate any further if there's anything else to say.
Ms. Frazier, anything else?
Mr. Chair, Representative Simon, if there are questions, I'd be happy to answer.
Ms. Frazier, I don't think we've done sections 1 and 2.
We did.
Any further discussion to the bill as amended? Representative Broad.
Mr. Chairman, if there's further discussion, I can wait. I just wanted to make sure that I have an amendment.
Is yours the A4 amendment?
The A4 amendment. A4. But I can wait for the discussion to go.
All right. Representative Khan.
Mr. Chairman, I also have an amendment, the A2 amendment.
All right. The one that's been passed out is the A4. Ms. Frazier, do you have the A4 amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Representative Broad, are you going to move the A4 amendment?
Mr. Chairman, I'll move the A4 amendment.
All right, to the A4 amendment, and then describe the amendment, and then I want Ms. Frazier to tell us what that does to the bundle.
Sure.
So, Representative Broad.
Mr. Chairman, in my view, it just improves the bundle. It makes a good bundle even better. And I think that the bundled group of bills right now are have come a long way, and I want to thank everybody who's worked on their portions of the bill and the Secretary of State's office and in moving it into a direction that I think is strongly supported by a variety of people. But I do think that as far as moving non-controversial bills forward, we also are saying these are the priorities that our committee, these are the priorities of the Secretary of State's office in terms of trying to move this non-controversial piece forward. Of the non-controversial pieces, these are the ones that we think should move forward. And, Mr. Chairman, I think that we are missing a huge chunk of legislation that is a very important piece of legislation to get done in my mind, and that's the military voting provisions, which are a portion of Representative Kalin's bill.
Last year, Representative Kalin's bill was actually identified in the veto message, not for the military provisions, but for the other provisions located in that bill. Representative Hilty and I had worked at late in session on some agreements related to the non-controversial portions, at least getting the military provisions of that bill done. You all know, and I think we've had good conversations in this committee regarding making sure that our military votes are counted. Short of moving our primary up, which I still think we ought to be doing, I do think that we shouldn't wait for another year in getting some of these non-controversial provisions done to make sure that our military men and women are having their votes counted fairly and squarely.
Representative Broad, we do have Representative Kalin's bill before us tomorrow.
Yes, I'm aware of that, Mr. Chairman. What I'm trying to do is I have spoken with the governor's office, and they have no problems with my amendment. I've spoken with the Senate Republicans, and they're speaking with the Senate Senator Rest about adding one more provision into this non-controversial bill. To me, Mr. Chairman, this is a no-brainer. We should get this piece done and not hold this part of the bill hostage to making sure that the people who have never lived in this state vote in this state. And that's what Representative Kalin's bill does.
Mr. Frazier, to the amendment, and then to Representative Broad's comments that the governor is in support of this amendment, if it's added.
Mr. Chairman, my comments were that I've spoken to their office, and they have no problem with my amendment.
Well, Representative Broad, that's not the question. The question is, if the amendment's added, will the governor sign the bill with the addition of this amendment? And this is not to Ms. Frazier, this is to you.
Mr. Chairman, I wouldn't presume to portray what the governor will and won't do.
Ms. Frazier.
Mr. Chair, as to this amendment, the process with the governor's office was to discuss provisions that that both offices were okay with, or finding ways that we could be okay with all of the pieces of the bill. And we, Representative Rudd, you and I have not discussed this amendment, and I don't believe we talked to anyone else in our office about it, and we are not supportive of this amendment.
All right.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
Representative
Rudd. Let me ask Ms. Frazier, your lack of support for the amendment, is it based on the context of the amendment, or is it based on the non-agreement that you're bringing forward?
Well, Representative Broad, it may be based on the volatility of what this amendment could do.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure how this is volatile at all, but I understand that there might be other perspectives at the table.
If the bundle blows up, it's volatile. Representative Kalin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a few quick questions for Representative Broad. Have you spoken with Paulie Brunelli or anyone else in the Department of Defense or the Pentagon about the amendment?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Kalin, I've spoken with them last year related to your bill, and my discussions with them were not specific to this amendment, but my discussions with them were related to the bill in general, and where there's areas of commonality, areas of support, and where there's areas of concern.
Members, as the author of this bundle, I'm going to speak against the amendment. I would hope that what we would be able to do this session is actually craft legislation that could become law. That is the purpose of a committee and a legislative branch. If the Secretary of State's office hasn't been notified, and I really haven't been notified, I am hesitant to start adding things to this bill. Representative Hilty is the first example of what happened when a provision was added to a bill that was agreed to. So I will speak against the amendment. Representative Kalin?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that most of this discussion about the provisions of this bill, this amendment, can wait until we deal with Senate File 1218 tomorrow. But I think it's important to note that the Department of Justice may have such a problem with the provisions of this bill, specifically Section 6, but other provisions of the amendment, excuse me, that it could invite the kind of oversight and intervention in Minnesota's election procedures that we saw 40 and 50 years ago in the Deep South. Violations, creating special classes and violations of the Voting Rights Act are quite serious, and those are the very concerns that were raised by the Pentagon and the Department and Ms. Brunelli specifically when we met with her via conference call and the governor's staff, as well as the Senate author of my bill. The issues in this amendment need to be vetted thoroughly and completely, and I believe that Senate File 1218 is the appropriate way to do so, and I will join you, Mr. Chair, in urging members to vote no. It's a very serious issue. It's very important that we enfranchise every citizen and extend that constitutional right and remove every barrier. This amendment actually creates more barriers rather than removes them, and is a very misguided attempt to do what is right.
Representative Broad.
Well, Mr. Chairman, in all due respect to you, I think our committee process is exactly the process in which we should be focused. I think these agreements are interesting and important, and I wouldn't have brought forward a piece of legislation that I thought would blow up the agreement. I truthfully believe that this one makes it better. Representative Kalin, I'm surprised that you suggest that this language creates barriers. This is your language. This is the language taken directly out of your bill. It's moved. What we did is that we just dropped a few portions of things out of your bill. This is what Representative Schulte and I worked on last year at the end of session as we tried to come up with a non-controversial bill, which we did, by the way, but couldn't get through it at the end of session with the rush of bills. So this is not language that's made up. This language has been thoroughly vetted. It is not language that I brought forward.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Kalin.
Just really briefly, Section 6 is never in my bill. The language that you see there, we never create. The Pentagon does not create special classes between military and support. I would appreciate if Representative Broad would not make allegations of this. So let's dial things down and save this discussion for Senate File 1218.
Representative Kalin, Representative Broad, I would presume you're going to offer this tomorrow again.
Mr. Chairman, no, I'll be offering a different amendment tomorrow. But, Mr. Chairman, I think this is a very, very important issue. And as we try to bring a non-controversial bill forward, whether this is the language or not, what we should be doing is making sure that our military men and women can vote in a way that works. And so, to me, as we talk about priorities for elections bills this session, that's a priority. We know that the bill that's being brought forward is not a bill that can be signed into law. So, Mr. Chairman, in the spirit of what you're trying to do, and in the spirit of what I think we should be doing, that's the spirit in which this amendment is offered.
Broad, when you said the bill will not be signed into law, are you referring to
Representative Kalin's bill, Mr.
Kalin.
Chairman? My apologies
that's
for
right.
not clarifying.
That's right. I'm just
that.
Trying for clarification myself. Any further discussion to the Broad amendment? Seeing no further discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay?
No.
Motion does not prevail. Any further discussion? Representative Kahn.
Mr. Chairman, I would like to propose another amendment, the A2 amendment.
And A2, the members have the A2 amendment. All right, Representative Kahn, are you moving the A2 amendment?
Yes, I would like to move the A2 amendment.
Representative Kahn.
This is, and I admit I have not discussed it with the governor's office, but I would promptly go to discuss it with the governor's office, and should it need to come out of the bill, would gladly take it out at some future time. This is the difficulty that occurred in one of my elections. It occurred more recently in another election, and it's actually occurred in the other direction. This is where someone files for election and their residence is clearly outside of the district. It turns out our Constitution states everything says that you have to, it tells us how long you have to live in the district before you can file for election. We've had several cases on this issue, and it seems to me that the very simple one where the address is outside of the district ought to be a secretarial removal from the ballot. Instead, we had to go to court to remove the person from the ballot. In other cases, the other thing that this fixes up is that a couple of times people have filed for election and just didn't, I guess the person in my case, also didn't understand that he lived, that he lived out of the district, and were, after filings closed, there was then no candidate for that seat, because in most cases when people are told that they don't live in the district so that they don't meet the constitutional requirements, they just drop out and they don't pursue it. The person was more stubborn in my case, having a unique description of what his intent was in living in the district. And so I just think that this is a simple way of cleaning up our court and of useless cases, and it also means that if someone's put down the wrong address or filed by mistake in the wrong district, there's also a chance for them to be notified if it's looked at, if it's noted before that, and that the officer, the filing officer, determines that they then notify the candidate, so the candidate has a chance to file in the right district. I guess they don't get a chance to change the address. So.
All right, first I'm kind of going to speak against the amendment, and I would hope you would withdraw it for the same reasons we discussed on the Broad Amendment. Representative Connell.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I guess I will withdraw it because of the bill that you've just, I do intend, even though I know that Representative Kalin doesn't like it either, I will offer it to the election bill tomorrow. But this is a distinctly a common sense procedure that I don't understand why there would be any opposition to. So we'll withdraw it at this point.
Thank you for withdrawing. Any other amendments? Is there an A3 amendment?
Mr. Chairman, that's my amendment.
Representative Broad.
Mr. Chairman, this again is an attempt to I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. Yes, I'll move the A3 amendment.
Representative Broad moves the A3 amendment to the amendment.
And Mr. Chairman, again, I'm trying to make sure that we're taking care of in this non-controversial bill, non-controversial things such as making sure that adultery men and women can vote. This, Mr. Chairman, is actually Representative Hilty's bill, which has been worked on by the governor's office, with the governor's office, with the National Guard, with the military. This one, Mr. Chairman, is a very good way and a very good piece of work by Representative Hilty in terms of getting language done to ensure that our military men and women can vote. It's non-controversial since the governor's office worked on the bill and is in support of that bill. Mr. Chairman, I think it's very clear that the governor would sign it with this language in.
Representative Hilty, you want to respond since this is your bill?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. It is my bill. I agreed to introduce the bill, but as Representative Broad knows from our discussions last year, my preference certainly is for Representative Kalin's bill that we will be taking up tomorrow. It was not my intent in introducing this bill to supplant Representative Kalin's bill. I thought that it would be good to have it in place if the body decided not to adopt Representative Kalin's bill, but I would hope that they would, because it's not my intention to disenfranchise any overseas voters.
Any further discussion to the A3 amendment? Representative Broad?
Mr. Chairman, I'd like a roll call on this.
Roll call has been requested. The clerk will take the roll. Chair votes no.
Anderson?
Aye.
Broad?
Yes.
Emmer?
Yes.
Hilty?
No.
Holmes? Hahn?
No.
Kalin?
No.
Morgan?
No.
Nelson?
No.
Olson?
Yes.
Peterson?
No.
There being 4 ayes and 10 nays, the motion does not prevail. Members to the bill as amended. Any further discussion? Representative Hilton.
Mr. Chair, I'll just say briefly, I think one of the most significant features of this bill is Representative McFarland's provision providing for nonpartisan election judges. In all the township meetings that I have attended and meetings that I have attended with and encounters I have had with elections officials all over the state, this is their number one issue. It's getting more and more difficult to find election judges, and whenever this came up, this was absolutely the number one issue. Appreciate it being in the bill.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Ms. Frazier, I want to thank you. You put in a great deal of work on this, and I would hope that we would make it through the floor and to the government's desk. With that, I will renew my motion to House File 3172 as amended. Representative Olson, did you have a comment?
excuse me, Mr. Chair. I was just going to comment on the nonpartisan election judges is the reason why I would vote no. For one thing, it's practically impossible, and just because it's hard to find election judges, I don't think it warrants creating a policy that makes it almost impossible to find election judges that would truly be non-biased.
All right. Members, I will renew my motion that House File 3172, as amended, be recommended to pass and be placed on the general register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay?
No.
Motion prevails. Thank you, Ms. Frazier. Representative Winkler, to your bill, House File 3470. Representative Winkler.
Mr. Chair, members, there is an amendment that I believe Mark Shepherd is distributing.
All right. Representative Winkler, I believe the bill has to go to finance. That's the initial motion. So why don't you make the initial motion to get the bill before us?
Okay, Mr. Chair, I would move that House File 3470 be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Finance.
All right. Representative Winkler, and it's the A1 amendment.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Why don't you explain the A1 amendment while it's being passed out?
And the A1 amendment, Mr. Chair, is why this bill needs to go to finance, because it changes Subdivision 3 under, I guess it's under Section 1 of the bill. Originally, the bill draft said that the rulemaking done by the, or the standards established by the Department of Education would be exempt from the rulemaking process, and the amendment simply requires that they be subject to expedited rulemaking. And that's all the amendment does. So I think there will be some minimal fiscal cost associated with expedited rulemaking.
All right, why don't we, does everyone have the amendment? And they've heard the explanation. So all those in favor of the A1 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Representative Winkler, to the bill is amended.
Mr. Chair, members, this bill represents a great deal of collaboration and work over the last year and a half with the Department of Education, as well as with school districts and technology officers and regional groups like TIES from around the state. And the simple idea is that as we are investing in technology in schools around the state, we should, to the extent we can, have a common vision of where that technology should lead us, so that we can align technology investment to a common standard. I know that John Paulson from the Department of Education is here today. If there are any specific questions, I'm feeling a little bit under the weather and slightly unfocused today. But essentially what this does is create a vision of where technology in schools can go for Minnesota. It puts in place a process whereby the department will develop standards in collaboration with local districts. Local districts will then have an opportunity to compare their current technology offerings and determine whether they are aligned with the state standards, whether there are service gaps, and what the district's budget need is in order to be able to fill those service gaps. And they will then need to report that to the legislature in preparation for our budget years, so that as we invest in education technology, we will be doing so on according to a plan as opposed to sort of an ad hoc basis.
Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Winkler, does your bill in any way create an unfunded mandate?
Representative Winkler.
Chair, Representative Morgan, no, it does not. It simply is a process to identify gaps.
Any further discussion to the bill? Seeing no further discussion, Representative Winkler renews his motion that House File 3470 as amended be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Finance Committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails.
Mr. Chair.
Members, we're looking for Representative Muller. He isn't here yet. I'm going to bring up House File 3494, and I'd like Doerr and I think Vic Moore to come to the table, please. I said yes. All right. Is there an amendment to this? Members, House File 3494 deals with state employees and blood donations. I'm going to move that the bill go to finance. There is the potential here of a fiscal note, and with the potential of a fiscal note, given our fiscal woes, this bill is going to finance where that will be addressed. So I will move that House File 3494 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Finance Committee. And then there is an A1 amendment, and I believe this A1 amendment is a compromise between Doerr. So if we would have Doerr explain the A1 amendment, welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm Jared Jordahl with the Department of Employee Relations. The A1 amendment is provides for 14 days notice prior to taking this leave. This is very important for our 24/7 facilities and is a reasonable compromise.
All right. And then, Mr. Moore, do you want to speak to the A1 amendment?
Mr. Chairman, I'm Vic Moore. I'm representing American Red Cross, and I actually have with me today Rick Panning, who's the Chief Executive Officer of the North Central Region for Blood Services of the American Red Cross. And I would like, Mr. Chair, if I could yield to Mr. Panning, and he has approved this amendment.
All right, Ms. Panning.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, as has been stated, I'm Rick Panning. I'm the CEO of the American Red Cross North Central Blood Services here in Minnesota. And I and my colleagues from Memorial Blood Center and also the Mayo Clinic, which are the three organizations in Minnesota that collect blood from donors, are supporting this bill as we work to identify ways to provide incentive for more of our population to become donors. The state of Minnesota is already a good steward in this regard, in that many of the departments within the government do host blood drives and allow their employees to donate during work hours. But what this bill will do is allow employees from across the state, maybe in places that do not have the ability to have a blood drive on site, or maybe where I and my colleagues are not able to get on site, to be able to donate in their community, whether it be at a church or a business or at a school. The reality is right now is that because of regulations from the FDA, fewer and fewer people are able to give blood because of the restrictions that have been put on us. And of that, 37% of the population that could give blood, only about 5% of them actually do. So any incentive that we can provide to give people a better reason to donate blood, we would support. A similar bill has been passed in Illinois, New York, and Texas, and we support this bill to help increase the blood supply.
All right. Any further discussion to the A1 amendment? Representative Kahn. To the amendment, Representative Kahn. If it's not to the amendment, I'm going to put the amendment on, and then you can go to the bill.
Sure.
All right. Seeing no further discussion, all those in favor of the A1 amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Representative Kahn, now to the bill.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I guess I was confused because Mr. Moore was clearly speaking to the bill. But Section 2, why do we need state law to?
Well, Representative Kahn, I had raised the same question, so if Mr. Moore would like to answer that question. Why do we need Section 2?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kahn, as was stated earlier, many states are looking into this and actually doing it. And as we looked into it, we discovered that many state agencies do provide for on-site blood donation, where they would not require their employee to take any time off if Red Cross actually went on-site with their mobile unit. Unfortunately, that's not the case in some areas where they can't provide an on-site location. So the amendment addresses that,
yes,
along with the bill, so that they would get a minimum of 3 hours in a 12-month period is quite slight for going off of the site to a location away from where they are employed.
I understand that. Section 2 is my question, is why this is permissive. I understand that. I don't know who's covered in 181.9458. Maybe that's my problem.
Right. Representative Kahn, this was intended to go in there just to plant the seed with the private sector that they may do that. We may want to pursue making that mandatory at some later date or year. When this was raised in the other body, it was also pointed out that this clarifies that this would not include or make mandatory political subdivisions, the state university and state college system that would fall under this particular section.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm not. Are members of the state university system state employees? Are members of the University of Minnesota state employees?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn, for the purposes of this section, they are not. They are not included under the section in Section 1. They possibly could be included under Section 2, but that is only permissive.
Representative Kahn, I believe legislation that was passed in the 1990s, I know the author very well, stated that Minsky was not a state agency.
But that doesn't mean that, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, Representative Kahn.
I'm not entirely sure it means that they're not a state employee.
Representative Kahn, for issues such as this, it actually did. But
I don't know. Okay.
Members, I want to talk for a second to the potential of a fiscal note here. Fiscal notes are interesting given our dilemma. In the Finance Committee, I would hope at some point we will begin a discussion of what happens when negative numbers go to the agencies. It's easy for an agency to say now they can absorb it. It isn't that easy when they get a cut of 3 or 4%. So while I know that Doerr maybe hasn't stated publicly, and I'm not asking you to state publicly, but my concern is that any fiscal note of any size, when an agency receives a cut, suddenly absorption isn't the issue anymore. And I have had this happen before, where bills that were just going to be absorbed and they would somehow be funded, when we had tough times, the agencies did not do them. So I would hope when this gets to the Finance Committee, and I'm on the Finance Committee, we take a serious look at what's happening with these fiscal notes. They begin to add up very quickly. And the governor has proposed significant cuts to the agencies. Representative Kahn, are you waiving or just...
All right, I'll wait till you finish.
All right, Representative Kahn.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I have, I don't... If you want to send it to Finance, that's just fine. But I really find it hard to see that 3 hours in a 12-month period is a fiscal impact that any agency cannot absorb, even with 3 or 4 or 10% cut. The other thing is I still have problems with having Section 2 in the bill. I find it particularly strange coming from former Senate staff member when the Senate was always... I thought his previous training would mean that you don't put extraneous language into law. And I think we either make that May, March, or we ought to take out Section 2. I don't see the need for adding it. I mean, or we should add a whole bunch of other things that we could allow people to give sick leave for and all sorts of other stuff which are also valuable.
Well, the other stuff isn't before us today. The blood donations are. Any further discussion to the bill? Representative Anderson.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Moore, I just had a question on this, making it so that they must be granted leave. Does that allow for a manager, say there's three people in a unit that all wanted to go and donate blood together off-site, would the manager be able to kind of stagger that a little bit so that they wouldn't have a hole, of staffing purposes, or do they automatically have the grant and the lease.
Mr. Marks.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Anderson, if they met the 14-day notification requirement, I guess the answer would be yes, they would have to grant that leave. But hopefully that 15-day requirement gives a heads up to management where they would be able to discuss it with the employees and come to some resolution if it wasn't satisfactory to have all three of them or more leave at the same time. And the intent of the notice basically is to provide that cushion and some awareness of what might be coming up.
Representative Anderson. Okay. Any further discussion? Seeing no further discussion, I renew my motion that House File 3494 be recommended to pass and be sent to the Finance Committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Thank We're waiting for Representative Mullery. He's got... Is he here?
He's not here.
He left.
He would be here in a minute or two.
All right. I think we've covered everyone's... Everything. Representative Morgan, do you have a motion for us? I believe you do.
Mr. Chair, while we have this break in the action, I would like to move the minutes of Thursday, March 6th.
Representative Morgan moves the minutes. Any discussion? Seeing no discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Representative Mullery, why don't you sit down? Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Mullery, I'm going to move that House File 294 be recommended to pass and be placed on the general register. Is that correct?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
All right, Representative Mullery, then to your bill, and I believe you have a number of testifiers, so if you want to bring them up.
One's on her way, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, this bill goes back to the way the Pollution Control Agency was set up before, with the chair acting under the board of actual, what we might call real people out there, the citizens. And our witnesses are, the first one is Grant Merritt, the former chairman of, or former agency head. And then who else is?
Jim Dunlop.
Jim Dunlop is also going to testify.
All right, Mr. Merritt, welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. My name is Grant Merritt. Excuse me, I live in New Hope, and I've been working on this bill for 4 or 5 years out of personal interest because I did serve for almost 5 years as the executive director, as they called it back in the 70s, under Governor Randall Anderson. And I had the advantage of being the advocate for the environment, which is what Gordon Rosenmeyer, the author of the bill, envisioned back in the 1965 and 1967 session. So I've been involved as the staff director and also the advocate, and then as a lawyer before the board on some occasions since then. And I've observed the differences between the board since it was changed by Chuck Williams, the commissioner back in 1996 under Governor Carlson, and essentially became subservient to the staff and the commissioner, and really, to all extents and purposes, powerless. And many times the board meetings, the monthly board meetings, are canceled. I brought along a cancellation notice here from September of last year, and we had one 2 months ago. So of the last 6 months board meetings, two have been canceled, and the agendas are very short, you don't get the interaction between the staff and the board, and you don't have a policy-making board. That was the genius of what Gordon Rosenmeyer and John Tracy Anderson in the House and Willard Munger created in this agency, as well as the combined air, water, solid waste functions, noise, and radioactivity, back in 67. So, by reinstating the policy-making board in this bill, you will be reforming the agency. It's, in essence, an infrastructure repair that we have here. It'll result in faster and better environmental decisions. And by faster, I mean, as commissioner, you have to put the tough decisions out for the agency board meeting every month. You can't let the tough ones sit out on the desk for a long period of time. You do get more efficiency. You get better decisions because the staff has to respond to the board questions, just like you do here in a legislative hearing session. Decisions not only are better, but the media begins to cover the agency. We used to have all kinds of media coverage, meaning the public knows what's going on. You get more public participation, which is really the essence of a policy-making board for this kind of subject. I think it fits the environment maybe better than some other agencies, and it worked very well for 29 years. It was changed because Williams felt that the board had too much power. It's easier, obviously, it's easier for a commissioner to make the decisions and not have to sit in a board meeting and answer tough questions, which I had to do many times. And we dealt with very controversial decisions, but we often had packed rooms. Now nobody knows what's going on. I bet most of you couldn't name three members of the board. There's still nine board members there. They do have some power, but very little by comparison to what they used to have. So the public doesn't know what's going on. The media has very little interest. They don't show up for the most part. So I think by changing this, and I personally went through the record over at the law library and looked at what was done in 96 and drafted this bill, and then Representative Mulry, in a CLE where I happened to see him, offered to handle it. We weren't able to get hearings because of prior sessions, but we did. Whenever we've had a hearing before a committee, it's passed out, once in the Senate and earlier this session in the House Environment Policy Committee. So in essence, I put more of the arguments that I have in writing. Hopefully you've had a chance to look at them. I would now like to call on, or have Representative Mulry call on, a former board member and also a former staff member. Jim Dunlop was the public information director of the Pollution Control Agency for a number of years, and then he became a member of this powerless board under Jesse Ventura here a few years ago.
Mr. Dunlop, welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Grant. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Jim Dunlop. I am happily retired at the moment, but also happy to appear before you this morning to support House File 294. And I do so from the double perspective of having been a staff member, as Mr. Merritt mentioned, from 1971 to 77. And then I was appointed by Governor Ventura, so as Representative Mulry put it, I was one of the real people on the agency board from 1999 till 2003. And I saw how the board operated when I was a staff member, and as a board member, I also saw how it operated under the newly constituted version of the agency. And I'll tell you from my perspective, as a board member during those 3.5 years, it was sheer frustration because the staff prevailed on almost every issue. In fact, at that time, Commissioner Karen Stutters would wine and dine us board members, well, not wine, but but dying as board members and try to move us basically to become allies in full support of whatever the staff recommended. And of course she was commissioner, I mean that was chairman, as commissioner was chairman of the board, which I think was a big mistake. I can remember just anecdotally one time when the board voted to approve the staff position on a giant feedlot down in Fillmore County. I opposed that. I was recommending a full-blown environmental impact statement because the Environmental Policy Act does require that, where it's demonstrated that there might be a potential for a significant environmental impact, that then an environmental impact statement should be written. And I supported that position. I was the only board member to vote for that position. The other eight members voted to support the staff. And then, of course, we had hundreds of representatives of citizens, just ordinary people, common, you know, that lived in Fillmore County that opposed this feedlot. They were at the agency board to testify. They finally appealed the agency decision to the district court in Fillmore County. And we were having a meeting about that. Our staff attorney was there, and also Ms. Stutters was there, and board members were there. And I opined that I was in support of the citizens who opposed this feedlot. By the way, it was upheld in the Fillmore County District Court. The feedlot was never built. And Karen Stutters looked at me and said, "Jim, what do we have to do to get you on board here?" And I said, "Well, listen, Ms. Stutters, I must tell you that the way this board was originally constituted, it was here to provide a check and balance on the staff and not to just fall in line with and do whatever the staff recommended. The agency board is here to, in many ways, represent the citizens who oppose some of these projects." And it was just frustrating because I can't remember one time in the time I was on the board that the board differed with the staff. It was just almost a slam dunk. It was a paper board. Might as well not even have existed. So I strongly would recommend that the committee approve this bill and move it along so that we can reconstitute the Pollution Control Agency the way it was originally in the original legislation. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions? Representative Taylor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know if this is for either the testifiers or for Representative Mullery, but can you explain why the repealer is included? And I think that looking at the actual statute, it seems like there's a lot of the final decision-making authority for the agency is in those sections. And I'm curious if you have any thought about
Mullery, we can have Mr. Shepard answer that question. Mr. Shepard, why don't you answer that question?
Mr. Chair, members, the repealer of 116.02, several of the subdivisions there, I think the key one is subdivision 6, which requires the agency to make final decisions on the following matters, and it lists 7 of them, environmental assessment worksheet, environmental impact statement, scope and adequacy of environmental impact statement permits, final adoption of rules. And so that is repealed, and I don't know, because I haven't worked on the bill with Representative Mullery, I assume that under the existing law, the commissioner would then do those things without the agency.
Representative Mullery, you want to respond to that?
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Chairman? Wait, hold it. Let's have them respond
just
first.
Just a procedural question,
just wait
Mr.
one second.
Chairman.
Let's have them respond. So this is what's before us. Yeah, Mr. Merrick, welcome back.
I think the reason is, what I did was I went back to the original statute so that the board would now have the authority. What happened was that Chuck Williams, the commissioner, listed a number of things that would be delegated then to the staff. And so I simply substituted the original language of the statute drafted back in 67 for the 696 language.
All right, Representative Kalin, your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to this point, I'm wondering if Mr. Shepard, I know this isn't your area of expertise, but if you might be able to comment on whether with repealing those statutes, with Mr. Merritt's intent
would actually be reflected in statute.
Mr. Shepard.
Mr. Chairman, members, and again, I don't have Mr. Merritt or Mr. Dunlop's history with this issue, but as I read this, if you repealed the subdivision that requires the agency to make final decisions on the matters that I mentioned earlier, then there's another statute that says that the commissioner shall make all decisions on behalf of the agency that are not required to be made by the agency. So then I assume that all those decisions on environmental impact statements would be made by, and the other things I mentioned, would be made by the commissioner instead of the board. If I'm wrong...
We don't want to do that. If you're right, we don't want to do that.
Mr. Mayor, Irvin Mullery, do you want to weigh in here?
Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure that the bill is drafted exactly as the former executive director thought.
Not if it does that. We certainly don't want to...
Representative Kahn.
Mr. Chairman, my comment is just a process comment. I thought we were always supposed to, when we had a bill with repealers, have the repealers before us, so we don't have to fight over the one copy of the statutes that we have. And I don't know whose fault it is that we don't, but I would sure, in this case, I think it's really critical that we have it.
Representative Kahn, I agree with you, and I think what's happened, and we have run into this, unfortunately, several times over the last few weeks, we have stressed, because of the number of bills and hearings in this body, we have put a stress on our staff where errors are beginning to appear that simply should not appear. I'm not blaming anyone, but these errors are beginning to show up at every hearing. And when we're done with the bill deadline, we're going to take a look at the structure and see if we can go back to where we can take some of the load off the staff and let them have the time to do it the way we had instructed them to do. But I agree, those repealers should be there. But that's not the, that's one issue. I think we have a serious problem with the bill. That's the second issue. And the bill shouldn't proceed given this type of a question. This is an extremely serious question. If it isn't drafted properly, the bill will not go out of this committee. So, Representative Kahn.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'll go back to, well, that part of the, first of all, I thought that that was something that just automatically came from the revisor's office, so I don't think it's committee staff.
Well, Representative Kahn,
I know.
The issues we've had up there, and we're going to do this after we're done with bill deadline, are serious issues, and they deal directly with this, but off your issue of having repealers into the bill.
Okay, yes, I want to speak in opposition to the bill. I understand the frustration with possibly how the Pollution Control Agency is working now. I understand the frustration of not using this this pretty strong board that should give us the kind of discussions that we like. But I just have the old-fashioned idea that I like to see lines of responsibility. We elected a governor. I did not vote for that person as governor, but I like to see the line of responsibility going directly to that person, and I have had a strong position, sometimes successfully, all through my career of getting rid of governing boards wherever they appear. I don't think that they're... I think the idea of a commissioner appointed by the governor and responsive to the governor is the way our representative democracy ought to work, with the checks and balances provided by the legislature and the courts, as we understand it did work in that Fillmore County county issue.
Representative Kalin, because we're running out of time.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Consulting with the author, I'm going to move to delete Section 5, delete the repealer from the bill, give the author the chance to resolve some of these issues, and I leave it to the discretion of the chair on your feelings about moving
right.
the bill along.
We are not the move-along committee.
I understand
here's
that,
what's
sir.
Going to happen. I'm going to withdraw my motion. I'm going to ask Representative Mullery to work on the bill with whichever staff is required to make sure when the bill comes back to us, it's in the form with whatever repealers are there. This is a serious issue. This is an agency that we have had major problems with. You brought up one issue in Fillmore County. We could bring up the Preston Tire Plant and several other issues that dealt with the PCA. So, Representative Mullery, I realize we're under deadline here, but I want this bill to be in better shape, so I'm going to withdraw my motion. We'll get you back up this week, but this bill's got to be in perfect order. And with that, members, meeting is adjourned.
Thank you.